Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. And in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Great to hear your voice.
And yours. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Here we are again.
Say that again.
Here we are again, ready to talk to folks around the world.
Yes, we are. It's an exciting project.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And guess what? We already have a caller.
Oh, that is so good. I have to tell you this one little funny thing before we take that call. I'm actually on retreat at the monastery right now.
Yes.
And so we finished our afternoon workshop session, and I was helping out in the kitchen and doing some stuff. And one of the monks came by and said something, and I can't remember what was said, but it was something that started a chain of connections. And I looked down at my watch, and I said, "Oh, my. I have to be on the radio in 10 minutes." And I dashed out. And I was just thinking when you said that, my, how very close I came to. The caller was there. Michael was there. And I was not.
Uh-huh.
So.
And the power of awareness.
Yes, and the gratitude when the awareness comes through and there's that moment of, oh, yes. All right.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I'd like to welcome Celia from Seattle.
Celia, how are you?
I'm very well, Sherry. Thank you. Hello, and hello, Michael.
Hi.
Hi.
You have had a big assignment this week.
Oh, I did.
I remember. That was just last week, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
I'm sort of embarrassed to call in again so soon.
Oh, no, we like progress reports.
Yeah. Well, that's what this is. So I made this commitment to my marriage, or a deeper commitment to my marriage, and it was sort of kind of... that in itself was almost like an anticlimax.
Uh-huh.
And once I sort of accepted it and said, yes, that's it. I'm here for the whatever the duration is.
Mm-hmm.
Then I did start to see little things about sort of all around that. Things like, when you don't commit to your husband, you know, if you lose him, it's maybe not so bad.
Uh-huh.
Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was very sort of interesting because in my sitting, maybe because all those conversations in my head started to go away, I started to see something that I find very, very embarrassing to talk about, which is that I have these conversations or these voices in my mind all the time announcing to everybody how they should be living and how I know that how they should be living and how they should be doing Zen and...
Uh-huh, kind of from on high.
Yeah.
Sort of the voice of God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I call that person from this character who used to be on TV when I was a kid growing up, the world's foremost expert.
Yeah.
And that was the title. You know, it's like regardless of the subject, this is the world's foremost expert. And that's that kind of voice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just knows everything about everybody, knows what's right, what's wrong, how it needs to happen. Yeah.
But most in particular about practice.
Uh-huh.
Which is so great. You know, I'm sitting and it's saying how everybody else should sit and
uh-huh.
how great it would be if they sat.
Uh-huh. So you can start a little checklist, right?
Yeah.
Starting probably with your husband.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
And you know,
and my kids
are, yeah, yeah. You just go through the entire family and then your close friends and then acquaintances,
yeah,
and then we just go all the way out to the world. And it's this, it can take up an entire sitting period, can't it?
Oh, much more than a sitting period.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah
finding it.
The sitting period is all that's required, though.
Yes.
During sitting, I can sit, and my conditioned mind is in a conversation about how people should be in practice. And of course, until I'm practicing awareness at a fairly deep level, I fail to notice that this process is keeping me from doing what I'm saying everybody else should be doing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Now, see, this is, I like this this combination, because if I am living in a conversation about my marriage and about what's wrong with it and about how I should leave it, then I don't ever have to be present to the marriage. Okay, so I don't have to see about the marriage. I don't have to see my partner. I don't have to see my karma, the beliefs and assumptions that are being held in place, my orientation to life. It's like I just can stay on the surface of everything in this one conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now the next aspect of that that is so interesting to see, is that while I am in that, on that surface level, everything that is holding my life in place goes unnoticed. Yeah? So as soon as I see that that's what's going on, I'm in this one conversation, then what kicks in is, well, what's wrong with you is the fact that you live your whole life in this one conversation. Okay?
Yeah.
So now I've gone down one level.
Yeah.
Okay? And so an awful lot of people, sadly, stay in that first level of conversation having no idea that that's what's going on. Almost everybody else, if they see that first level of conversation for what it is, gets stuck in the, and now we've identified what's wrong with you.
Uh-huh.
So if we can get through that first level of conversation, not, you know, we're meant to believe that the content is important, and it's not. This is meant to be seen as a big deal because this is your husband. This is your marriage. Okay? I'm guessing this is the person with whom you have children.
Yes.
Yeah? So this is important, but it's not. To serve this purpose, that conversation could be about anything. The whole point of it is that it just needs to be something that will engage you and keep you from seeing how life works.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you've seen through the first level of conversation. You've seen through the, this makes you a bad person. Now, everything is available to you. Because there's nothing keeping you from seeing any longer.
Well, the funny thing that's happened is, it didn't happen just so terribly suddenly, but there was a big jump in this week, which is, I feel as though there's been a big dam burst or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this, I'm taking the email class, and the first big thing that happened was getting rid of distractions. The second big thing that happened was this commitment to my marriage. And it's as though my entire life has been changed.
Yes.
I don't do downtime anymore. I get up early. I go from the beginning of the day to the end of the day in constant something.
Now, is it a constant aware something, or is it a constant you're being pulled into a different kind of distraction? You're not reading newspapers or watching TV. Now you're into the busy distraction.
Well, that's a really good question, and I've been looking at that because I feel part of it feels very fast, like things are happening very fast. I keep coming up for things. But on the other hand, part of it is a kind of there's nothing holding me back, and so I'm making contact in places. And somehow my commitment to practice jumped, made this huge jump. It was like something grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and said, you're going to sit another with your group another time this week. Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. It was really like the mother dog grabbing the puppy by the scruff of the neck. It's not a mean and cruel thing. It's a, you need to get from here to there, here.
Yeah.
This is the fastest way for you to get there.
Yeah, yeah. It's uh-huh. You need to do this. You need to uh-huh. do a lot of this.
Uh-huh.
So, okay.
And you have time and energy for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're not doing all of those things that sapped your time and energy and left you feeling at the end of the day like, oh, I can't possibly take care of myself because I'm just too wiped out from being unconscious and distracted all day long. I need to spend some time being unconscious and distracted to recover from right. all of that unconsciousness and distraction. Right? So you go along through the day, now you have all this time and energy. What do you want to do with? Well, I want to do this and this and this, and I want to sit and I want to exercise and I want to eat well, and I want to be ready at night to go to sleep and sleep soundly, and I want to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You hit a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to be on the radio.
Uh huh.
I want to call in and
talk to people who are doing practice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Now, the thing, of course, that because conditioned mind is not going to say, oh, you caught on, you win, we give up.
Oh.
Okay, so the whole system is just kind of, it's just circling around, kind of like sharks, okay, just waiting for the first sign of availability, vulnerability, weakness. And the odds are very good that before too long, you're going to get pulled back into forgetfulness and distraction and unconsciousness. And when you do, then you just note very carefully how that happened, what you saw, what you were believing that pulled you into that. And in that process, you'll be back here again. Your eyes will be open. You'll be seeing. And you'll just keep watching that movement in and out of conscious awareness until you see all of the things that pull you away from here, okay? And what you'll notice is you're spending more and more of your time here. You're enjoying life more. You're appreciating things more. You're having more fun. And you're not enjoying and appreciating as a volitional act. You know, you're not enjoying life because what you're doing is pursuing pleasure. You're enjoying life because increasingly you are simply with life, and that process is enjoyable.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. You keep having fun.
Thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Celia, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. If you'd like to join our conversation today, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number is toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. It's 877-514-7300. Phone lines are open here. If you're calling from abroad, you can dial 001-858-277-1444. And if you'd like to email us, you can email us when we're not on the air. And the email address is openair@livingcompassion.org. Also, one last announcement here. Archives of all the shows are available right here on the World Talk Radio website. You can just go to the show homepage, and you'll see the archives at the bottom there and catch up on all of the shows from the past several months.
Yeah, you can catch up, and you can also use it. Celia was talking about, you know, having time in the day, and I said, yeah, and you can spend that with extra sittings, or you can do some walking meditation, some time of silence and solitude, and you can also use those archives as a way of having a connection with other people doing the practice, just that reminder to come back to the present, come back to center, and just get some support for being present.
Yes, yes. It's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Sherry, I wanted to mention a workshop that you're doing coming up.
It is coming right up, isn't it?
Yes. Time is marching on. Saturday, August 20th in San Francisco. The workshop is Radical Self-Acceptance, and it's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and all of the information is on the livingcompassion.org website.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how it's called Radical Self-Acceptance.
Uh-huh.
Because I noticed for me that I hear self-acceptance, and I think, oh, yes, that's great. And as I begin to look, I start to notice all of those places that I don't accept myself.
Mm-hmm. And radical, I'm hoping, and it sounds like it's how you take it, implies no back door, no wiggle room.
Yes.
No, it's unequivocal.
Yes.
It's just that's how it is. So there's something there. You accept it. And if you don't accept it, then the work is on moving from a place of non-acceptance to a place of acceptance. That's what you're then practicing with, because the point, we're going beyond self-improvement. We're leaving self-improvement behind.
Yes.
Yeah, and so here you are. This is how you are. And, of course, as I'm fond of pointing out to people, until you are centered, you don't know how you are. As long as we're looking to see how we are and we're looking to conditioned mind to tell us, then we're going to get conditioned mind's assessment of us. So we have to get back to center and look at ourselves from center to see how we are. And we see how we are, and that's what we accept.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're also, of course, required to accept the lack of acceptance and conditioned mind and its shenanigans, and it's just acceptance. I was talking about it. I don't know if I was talking about it with you on the radio, but talking about acceptance as an open window.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And so that's how we are with ourselves. We are with ourselves like an open window. And so whatever is there just passes through the open window. There's nothing for it to bump up against. It's just a breeze going through an open window. So, you know, Celia was talking about the kinds of conversations that she hears about how people should be meditating and what they should be doing. And it just that's just a breeze, and it goes through an open window.
Yes.
You know, and then there's what the spouse or the kids or the boss or the coworkers are doing. And that just, it rides on a breeze right through that open window. And so I don't have to try not to think those thoughts or say those things or be that way, because it's just an open window, and all this stuff is just passing through.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful.
A lot of times in Zen, and probably in other traditions as well, it's we have the image of the clouds, you know, so the clouds are moving through the sky, and there are those thoughts about that, and that, there's that cloud, and then comes the thought about that, and there's another cloud moving through. It's just all passing through. We don't have to worry about it. In a way, we could say, and it's true, we don't even need to accept it, because accepting it requires somebody to do the accepting, and that's really necessary.
Yes.
Yeah. We don't actually need to have an open window. Right?
Yes.
Open space would work just as well.
Yes.
We don't have to create a window so that we can open it and let everything go through.
Yes. And as you're talking, I get this sense of not taking any of it personally.
Oh, it's so not personal. That's why the images of the breeze or the clouds are so perfect. I mean, you know, we'd have to be in a strange place to take those clouds personally.
Yes.
I mean, we would, you know, all of us listening to this show would know that we had slipped into a dangerous spot if we decided that those clouds were there to do something to us, to punish us or make us feel bad or to prove that we're the wrong person. We shouldn't be that way. And yet, if it's a thought in the head, we take it very personally, even though we have no ability to create it, We have no ability to get rid of it. It's very clear that we can't even influence it. Why would we take something like that personally?
Yes.
Yeah.
Incredible.
But habits, you know.
Say it again?
Old habits,
yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. In our next segment of Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness and taking your phone call. So keep it tuned here to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller on the line here.
As we like it.
I'd like to welcome David, San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello,
hi, David.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I can hear you well. No problem.
Good. What's going on?
All right. I have a couple of issues. One is I want to understand what you're trying to say when you talk about the sub-personalities. I have read your book, There's Nothing Wrong With You, and I reviewed that because I heard you on the radio talking about it, and I got a little confused. What's the definition of sub-personality? Is it anything that is not coming from your true being? And sub-personality, a feeling that comes up, it's a sub-personality. I'm confused.
Okay. A sub-personality, the way we talk about it is that it's a conditioned survival mechanism. So you're a little kid, and you, the one, you know, that we use in the book is you're afraid to go to bed at night. Because
right.
You're afraid of the dark.
Right.
And so you figure out some way to get past your fear enough to be able to go to sleep.
Right.
Yeah. So maybe you are old enough that you can figure out how to turn a light on. Maybe you cry until you're so exhausted that you just fall asleep and the fear is not an issue. Maybe you become manipulative and con your parents into staying with you until you fall. Okay, but there's some way that you develop to be able to cope with the things in life that are dangerous to you.
Okay.
Or perceived as dangerous. And then what tends to happen is that we continue to grow, and those coping mechanisms become a part of our personality,
yeah.
And then they continue to adapt. So, the little girl who learns to be cute and charming get her dad
mm-hmm.
to do what she wants
yeah.
will tend to fine-tune those skills when she's a teenager.
Right.
Okay, and then that's what she'll probably use to get her mate to do what she wants him to do.
Right, I got it.
Yeah. And we have all different kinds of those depending on various situations.
All right. When I get confused is, I think when some callers or something, I think I heard you talk about sub-personalities, when they were talking about their feelings about something, that something is triggering feelings, and I thought you were talking about those feelings as being just a subpersonality.
Well, they can be. So, for instance, an aspect of the personality might sort of contain an emotion.
Okay.
So maybe you have a certain aspect of yourself who gets sad and lives in a sad story. Okay? So this guy is he's just never going to have the life that he wants. He just can't make things go the way he wants them to go. He's never going to find true love or true happiness.
Mm.
Picture that?
Right.
Yeah. And the emotion is there. I mean, he's really generating this sadness. But it's not the same kind of sadness that you might feel if a good friend suddenly died.
Mm.
Okay?
I see.
So one goes with a personality. You could say there's a there was a character on Saturday Night Live, I think it was, but the lonely guy, and the comedian who was doing it just would act out the characteristics of this lonely, and I would say subpersonality, who would kind of take this guy over, and, you know, he had certain clothes that he wore and a facial expression and a way that he talked and a way that he viewed life, and he was lonely. But that's a different experience of loneliness from somebody you love left to go on a trip, and you miss that person, and you're lonely without them.
Right. Okay, I see. And what's the way to tell if it's the feeling is a true feeling or a subpersonality coming?
Well, now, this is an area that you're really going to have to explore for yourself, as all areas are. You know,
right.
You have to come to your own experience of it. But okay. One thing that I would, place that I'd encourage you to look is a true emotion doesn't last very long. So a feeling goes through, and then usually what happens is that the story kicks in.
Hmm.
So I get angry at you, and there's just a whoosh of, you could say, adrenaline or sensation or whatever it is that goes through.
Yes.
But then what I do is say, there he goes again. He always does that. I can't believe it, no matter what. Okay? Now I'm in the story. Now I'm just really revving everything up.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah, see. And that's really different from, gosh, darn it, that's upsetting. Oh, I'm so angry. And then, you know, in 15 seconds, I'm over it.
Right.
Yeah, but if I get that story going, I can stay mad at you for a lifetime.
Right, right. Well, I know that.
Right.
I've experienced that.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing about awareness practice is that what people will say, well, you know, all this looking at this stuff is really just going to repress emotion.
Right.
You know, you're just going to stuff your feelings. But that's not true. What we're learning to do is disconnect from the story and let the feelings be what they truly are.
Right, to flow through you.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah, when they're flowing, you know, you might experience, I'm making this up, okay, but you might experience 1,000 emotions a day.
I believe that.
Huh?
I would believe that.
Yeah, but if you're in your conditioning, you might experience 3.
Right.
Yeah, because you're in a sad story, and then you're in an angry story, and then you're in a whatever story.
Right.
Yeah.
I see. All right, the next, thank you very much for that, and the next thing that I'm struggling with is I have a 4-year-old daughter,
uh-huh.
And I try to practice what you suggest in your book about parenting. I love that book.
Oh, good.
And I try to bring awareness and all that, but there are certain areas I just don't know what to do. For example, she would hit me, or hit the mother, or would insult, you know, insult us, or, you know, really bad manners. And what we were doing at first was getting out, I think it was in your book or some other great book, just, you know, getting out of the area and going somewhere else and saying, you know, I'm not going to let you hurt me.
Yeah.
All right, that's great. But in daily life, I cannot do that. I cannot go to another place all the time. It's very hard to do that, to go to other place. I'm gonna have to go like 10 times a day, maybe, you know, and, you know, stop eating, go to the room, and there are so many situations that I cannot just leave and go. And every time when I try that, I go to the room and it's just a scandal, you know, just kicking and screaming, and just it seems to make it worse. And we just don't know what to do with that.
You're just kind of get to the end of your rope.
Right, and what we're doing now is that's not a good way. And you know, it's like punishment and reward. That's what we know how to do. You know, like, okay, well, let's say she's asking you to go to the park, and you say no, not this time, and she goes and hits you, or you may say no, not right now. Well, she hits you, and you say, well, we are not going today, because that's not the way to you know, get this. It's not to hit us or to insult us. We're not going to go today, and the way to do it is such and such, you know, nicely. You can ask, and we model for her, but we don't know. That seems to be going against what you propose in your book.
Well, you know, I have some really unorthodox child-rearing attitudes, actually, and what they come down to is this. I would say, number one, this is an intelligent child who is actually exploring the difference between what her parents are pretending and what's actually going on with them. Okay? So her parents are pretending to be nice and calm and speak softly and be logical and rational, but underneath they're seething volcanoes.
Okay.
Is this true?
Well, it could be at a certain point, not all the time.
Yeah, but there are times when you just want to reach down and jerk her arms and legs off of her.
Hmm.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. And now this is just something to play with, okay? I'm not saying this is the right thing to do, but this is just an area to look. That she will do this until you get serious. Right now, she knows she can do pretty much whatever she wants to do, and you're actually very confused about how to respond to her. So, you know, this time we try this and this, but what's missing is authenticity. What's missing is you and her mother, hopefully both of you, but really it would only take one of you, getting to a place of really, no kidding, I'm not fooling you, I've had it, this is enough, this is the line, don't step over it. And what people can say is, well, but, you know, what you're doing then is frightening the child. Mm-hmm. You know, what you're suggesting is making her afraid to do whatever it is. And maybe that's true. I think that a lot of that is projection. To me, it's saying clearly, no, this is where it ends. These are the things that you can do. You may not do that. Okay? Now, the implication is there are going to be dire consequences if she does that. And in my experience, you never have to produce those consequences because it's the commitment and the resolve in you that she is going to respond to. You're finally in an authentic place. You're finally out of your head and in the moment with her where this is going on. Because my projection about what she's doing is trying to get your attention. What she's saying is, be here, be here, be here, be here with me. Really be here with me, not in some, you know, conditioned theoretical world that you adults live in, but really here, I'll hit you, and that'll bring you here. But what it's bringing to her is not the kind of response, the kind of attention and presence that she's really looking for. What she gets then is rejection. And I'm speculating that she wants you really to meet her exactly where she is with the energy that she has, so she looks in your eyes and she knows that you actually are there with her, seeing her clearly, and these are her boundaries.
I'll look into that.
Okay, yeah, just to look inside yourself and see if what you see there is mostly ambivalence. You know, kind of, I want to be a good parent. I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to control my temper. I'm trying to be understanding, you know, and there's nothing for her to relate to. There's just this conditioned mass of wishy-washy.
So you would prefer that parents don't control their temper?
Oh, I don't think parents should control their tempers, no. I think that what we need to do with our temper, you know, I was raised German from German parents, but I'm really Italian.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? I think that there is no harm in letting children see passion. And to have emotion that is not directed toward anyone and doesn't take the form of blame or punishment, but to see that emotion expressed, to have parents model that. I think it's healthy.
That's a new way of looking at it.
Yeah, I think. Did you see the movie The Stepford Wives?
No.
Well, it's a great training film for modern parents.
What is it again?
The Stepford Wives. Stepford Wives, and it's a spoof about these women who are turned into robots, who are turned into the perfect women. Okay, and to me, that's what I see so often with parents. We idealize this artificial, sort of flat-lined, talking to kids in this particular tone of voice that is completely disconnected from real life. And somehow we've decided that that makes children feel safe and secure and I'm convinced it makes them anxious. It's like, who are these people? Where are my parents? Okay? Because they're not fooled by this surface pretense. You know, they can sense all the emotion that's behind that. I think it's very confusing for children. But I think if adults are real, whatever that real is, the children can handle it.
Oh, well, that's great. I have a lot to work now.
Good. So you look into that and let me know, okay?
Okay, good. Before you go, I have a definition, I think, of self-hate. Well, I found it for me, and it's impatience and anger at being human.
Uh-huh.
That was for me, concept.
And that is such a perfect tie-in, right, with what you've been talking about with your child. Because that's what we're looking at. There's all this human, and we've been taught that being human is not okay. And then the result of that, of trying not to be human, is self-hatred.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Cherry, again.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, David. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, I got the impression from your conversation with David that it's okay to have our feelings.
I would say so.
Yes.
That the price we pay for idealizing the alternative is just bigger than we really ought to be paying.
Yes. Yes.
And for what? You know, to what end? It's all about control and being controlled and feeling in control or out of control, and the most important thing is control. And what? I walk around saying control is an illusion. So, that all goes together is, so we're devoting our lives to trying to create and maintain an illusion?
Yes.
That's not smart.
Yes, yes.
So we have them. Why not enjoy them? They are how we experience ourselves.
Yes.
Our most intimate experience of ourselves is what we feel.
Yes.
Yeah, not what we think, because that's been given to us.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, as we've noticed, interpretation of what we're feeling has certainly been given to us.
Yes.
One of the things that the modern parenting things is when I see an adult talking to a child saying, "You're really angry, aren't you?" Like, would you stop projecting onto that child? Stop it, stop it, stop it!
Yes, yes.
It's not helpful. And even though, the parent has gone from smacking the kid across the room and saying, "I'm not putting up with your angry attitude," compassionate way is, "You're feeling really angry, aren't you, honey?" it's the same thing. I'm sorry. These are my feelings. I don't need you to tell me what they are.
Yes.
I don't actually need your opinion about them.
Yes.
Now, if you want to tell me about your feelings, I'm totally open to that. And that's another missing piece, with this whole idea that kids are somehow traumatized by knowing that adults have emotions.
Yes.
Well, there you are, say, Michael, a new dad, and
yes.
And you're going along, and you say to your child, "Whoo, boy, am I feeling tense here. I don't know what's going on. I realize I'm talking fast, and I'm actually not paying attention to you, not listening to you, because I'm doing this whole stressful thing. So let me just take a couple of breaths here and calm down and focus and listen to what you're saying." Now, that's a teaching for a child.
Yes, yes, yes. I can just imagine. It's wonderful.
But you're feeling bad because I haven't been paying attention to you, huh?
Right.
It's not a teaching.
Right.
In my world.
Yes, yes. Great. Sherry, we have another caller.
Right. Can't wait to see what this one's about.
I'd like to welcome Bobby from Sacramento. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Bobby.
Hi, Sherry. How you doing?
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
Pretty good. I recovered from that little stroke incident I had after the election. Everybody blamed that on George Bush, but...
But we know it wasn't his.
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
So how's life now?
It's pretty good. I sent you an email, but I don't know if I have your address right. But I noticed something, and this is kind of a neat metaphor, but I had been asleep, and I woke up, and I realized in the last dream I had before I woke up, I was doing self-hate in a dream.
Uh-huh.
And it was really interesting because here I was having this dream, experiencing some, dream state of myself in this other place with whatever I was interacting with. But in doing that, I was doing self-hate.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just...
That doesn't take a lot of interpretation, does it, a dream
well,
like that?
Well, yeah, and I'm going, wow, man, this is really deep deep inside your soul, this stuff, the way conditioning is woven into that, that it would pop up in a dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And a great insight for us all about that, that conditioned mind, conditioning, doesn't stop when we go to sleep. It's really one of the things that I find sad is that often people will use sleep as an escape from the difficulties of life. And, of course, what's happening when we do that is that we go to sleep and the conditioning is now able to work on us in that unconscious state even more than it's able to work on us when we're up walking around. Because when we're up walking around, we, of course, have a better chance of recognizing what's going on and taking a breath and coming back to the present. So, yeah, it's
right.
Big.
When I woke up, I found out that I was asleep. You know, it's kind of interesting. I mean, I know you understand exactly what I just said.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, so I was playing with that metaphorically, and I go, wow, you know, and just kind of looking at that. I was listening to the man you were talking to before then and how you were talking about children and stuff and all. And what I realized at a very young age, and this is horrible, is that they were all lying. And it blew me away because I'm going, wait a minute. And I remember this kind of being in the first of the self-hate book somewhat, see, about the way parents do and the voices we hear. Well, I'm over here going, well, these are the people that I'm supposed to entrust with the truth and knowledge. You know, I kind of looked at them as, you know, the deal. And so they're lying to me.
Yeah.
And one of the first awarenesses of me about that was I got into a fight with some kid when I was like in the first grade or something about whether or not there was a Santa Claus. And they sent me to the principal's office because I'd gotten to this tussle with this guy. This is back in the 50s. See, and they dragged me up to the principal's office, and the principal says to me, well, that's in fact right. It's your mom and your dad. That's Santa Claus. And I'm blown away here. I mean, my faith and all of what adulthood and all this about, see, is blown away. And I never forget this. This guy, just his mouth drops. And I said, well, at what age are you going to tell me there's no God?
Uh-huh.
At that point, I realized the adults in my life were liars.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah. That sounds weird, but that's what it looked like to me.
Yeah. Well, and of course, when we get older and start looking into it, we begin to see how much people are lying and have no idea that we're lying.
Right. And about control and fear, when you're talking about that, see, I've noticed that all of the stuff that we try and control is really based on fear because we want to know the results. And if we can control the results, somehow we think that we can be happy and all that. And what we end up being is just blocked in by all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think you gave there's about three examples that we can go with that. Well, I started looking at that and I go, well, that may be all cool, but it seems to me that what that's about is about fear and about wanting to know results and expectations. I remember in the human book that was put out about, it was about thy will be done. I didn't have to, and I remember that phrase just grabbed me out of that book about you. I mean, thy will be done. They didn't have to ask whose will or whatever, and it wasn't about control. It was about what really is.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
Being
yeah.
present to that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And you can call that God. You can call that the universe. You can call it life. You can call it that which animates you. You can call it whatever it is that if you need to call it something.
Mm-hmm.
It might be as simple as the moment.
Right.
But that's what's calling the shots.
Right, exactly.
And to attempt to control that, to attempt to turn ourselves into some configuration that is going to allow us to be in control of what contains us,
mm-hmm.
is just, it's insane and it's sad.
Well, in that being said, one of the things that I notice about awareness practice and conscious I mean, compassion. And see, it seems to be that out of awareness comes this presence of ourself in conscious consciously. And I mean, so that we're taught to go within and look within, maybe we should be able to see that we're part of the awareness experiencing ourselves.
Yes.
That we're part of that process.
Yes.
So it looks a little different.
Yeah. An expression of that process.
Right. We're connected with it, and it's hard to describe it because we're part of it.
Yes.
But when we become aware of that, it's kind of cool because we can relax into that without anything.
Exactly. And then the whole idea of control, we can just let go. It's unnecessary.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, Bobby, I think they're playing our song.
Well, I like that music. Dance.
So
I
we'll
like
have to meet
too.
Again like this.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
I'll see you when you come to town or around to the Bay Area or something. I'll try and get over there.
All right. Maybe August 20th.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Bobby.
Yep.
Joining us, Bobby, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Thank you, Sherry. It was another great show. I loved it.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a pleasure as always.
Yes, let's do it again next week.
I'm game.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Thank you.